Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 65. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Joining me today is Dwight Reed from Virginia. Dwight's daughter, Abby, has SMA, and he and his family are active members of the community who I've met several times at conferences. So, Dwight, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Kevin, thank you very much for having me on. I truly appreciate it.
Absolutely. No, I'm really looking forward to this one. So, well, before we get started, if everyone could please just listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a new FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
All right. Well, Dwight, to start off, just tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, anything you want to talk about, whether your job, when you started a family, any details about yourself you want listeners to know.
Sure. So I grew up here in Southwest Virginia, and I am currently employed as an inspector for a state government agency. Currently, I am teleworking part of the time, and then the rest of the time I am working from the field. So adapting to life during the pandemic. And my wife and I, we met back in 1998, senior year of high school, and I went to college and decided in 2001 to get married. And then we didn't start our family until much later, in 2007. And since that time, we've had three children. Our oldest son, he will be 13 next month. And then our youngest son, he is 11. And then our youngest, which is our daughter, Abby, which has SMA type 1, she will be turning 10 in October.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Yeah, and I know a lot of people, I'm sure, are adjusting to working from home and all of this in light of the pandemic. So that's definitely an adjustment for every SMA family, for sure, and right. Just everyone in general, but... Awesome. Well, and thinking about when Abby was diagnosed with SMA, so you had already had two kids at that point. What was the process of receiving her diagnosis like, and then also what steps did you take after that to sort of adapt to this new reality?
Sure. So at about the age of 3 or 4 months, we were noticing that Abby wasn't meeting her physical milestones. Our two boys, we could sit them in an extra saucer and they would bounce around with their hands in the air. She would just slump over. So we knew something wasn't right. We didn't know what it was. So after a period of time, we finally took her to a pediatrician. Pediatrician first thought that she was experiencing hypotonia and started physical therapy. We did that for a brief period of time. There were no improvements. She continued to worsen with her condition. And so we eventually took her to a pediatric neurologist where she was diagnosed at 7 months of age. And so that, I think that was pretty much answers the first question.
Sure.
What was the second question?
So what steps did you take to sort of adapt after that diagnosis?
Sure. So initially, we were given no hope. The pediatric neurologist told us, hey, just take her home, love her. There's nothing you can do for her. Let nature take its course. So that was a devastating blow. Psychologically, that was really tough to process at the time. And so we reached out to the SMA community at that time. And we found out an entirely different world that was available to us that supposedly wasn't available to us. And so we started learning about her disease and different treatments and things that could be done. We made the decision early on how invasive we were going to be with her in terms of surgeries. And my wife and I made the decision that as long as her quality of life was good, we would fight for her in any way that we could. So that's what we did. And then she almost immediately, we had a feeding tube installed that was around 7 months of age. and placed her on a BiPAP, which certainly helped. Her dietary needs were still very much lacking at that point. We had her on Pediasure. It made her really, respiratory-wise, made her really junky and very congested. In fact, that led up to her coating on us. She had a mucus plug, and she coated at about the age of 1.5. And following that emergency situation, we had her trached. So that was a tough decision to have to make as a parent, mm-hmm. but we felt it was in her best interest at that time, and still definitely do. And then following that, we started the amino acid diet, and that was around 2 years of age. And, of course, continued respiratory treatments and physical therapy.
Sure, sure. And I imagine, too, you know, you talked about how the neurologist just gave you minimal hope, and then once you became more immersed in the SMA community, you saw, you know, the total opposite. Was there any, like, thinking back to those, maybe those first conferences you went to, was there any, like, particular advice you had from either specialists there who were speaking at conferences or other parents that really opened your eyes? You know, I mean, thinking about, I mean, like, putting your daughter on physical therapy, which is something, you know, those the doctors who diagnosed her said wouldn't be a possibility at all. Like, what were some of those, like, big pieces of advice that really helped you on your journey?
I would say probably the amino acid diet, which, you know, prior to that, we had zero knowledge of, and particularly the tracheostomy. And that was something that, you know, being connected to the SMA community prior to her tracheostomy, you know, we'd had numerous families that we had interacted with and people within the community that had recommended it repeatedly. And so we knew it was coming, that, you know, at some point it would probably be the best decision for her, but we pushed it off until it was almost too late. And fortunately we were able to have it done in time, but I would say those two things.
Sure. And also, prior to the pandemic and everything, was Abby going to a normal public school, or how did you handle schooling?
She is actually homeschooled.
Okay, gotcha.
My wife homeschools her along with their two boys, and part of the reason for that, the biggest reason for that, is just exposure to viruses.
Yeah.
And so it's a means to help reduce exposure for her.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, and then kind of along those lines, talking about your family life and your family dynamic, you know, I'm curious, like, for instance, you talk about homeschooling. Was that, were your sons homeschooled prior to when Abby was born, or did that change more with her diagnosis and everything? Because I'm curious about the ways kind of once SMA entered the picture, it affected, you know, your whole family and your sons included.
Yeah, I tell you, it became much stronger. The need for homeschooling became significantly more important following her diagnosis. And really, you know, not just the diagnosis, but once we started understanding the complexity of her condition, and you know, a simple cold could be life threatening for her. Mm-hmm. And just the realization of that really led to an emphasis on the homeschooling as an option. And as far as other changes within our life, I would say it's hard to go into like every detail, because it's changed every facet of our life.
Sure.
Every facet. I mean, we haven't had a vacation since she's been born. You know, our children have never been on a vacation. My wife and I, we haven't had you know, a date night in years. Our shopping habits are different. Our hygiene is, you know, completely different. You know, a lot of what people are now doing during the pandemic is something that we've been doing for years.
Yeah.
You know, the almost surgical level of hygiene with proper hand washing, you know, as far as bringing groceries into the home, We've been cleaning those for years. As far as masking up, you know, any time that one of us in the home, my wife or I, either one, have felt ill or sick in any way, you know, it's not uncommon for us to be wearing masks in our own home. And, you know, during flu and cold season, you know, going out to the grocery store with a mask on, you know, pre-pandemic, there were a lot of hard looks and people, you know, it was a very different environment then, but those are things that, you know, we've been doing for years. And, it's definitely, you know, again, with the education, with our children, I just, you know, every area of our life has changed on some level.
Sure. Well, and with that too, thinking on kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, because I know we have these conversations in the SMA community a lot, and I mean, I write about my column about, like, the idea of, like, normalcy versus, and, like, you're always trying, like you've talked about, you're always trying to give Abby her best quality of life, which is absolutely something every SMA family tries to do to the best of their abilities. And so along those lines, like, you talked about the ways that, you know, your family has been heavily impacted by SMA, but in what ways, too, is your family just like any other family?
Well, despite our difference in lifestyle, we have the same needs. And that's mm-hmm. that's the one, you know, piece of information I would like to communicate to, you know, anyone outside of the community is, especially with the social needs, we have the same interest. We do a lot of the same, enjoy doing a lot of the same things. We're really, despite our difference in lifestyle, a lot about our life is still the same.
Sure. And I'm curious too, like, think about your sons and Abby, like, are there any common interests they have or things they like to do together?
Sure. Yeah. My boys and they're great because they're constantly, you know, helping monitor Abby with, you know, her vitals and checking on her and helping out with her. And so they enjoy watching a lot of the same TV shows and just keeping her company and things like that.
Sure.
Going on outings whenever we're able to go out on outings, which, you know, of course, right now, it's kind of an issue, but otherwise they would enjoy doing that with her.
Sure. I mean, hey, I'm a huge extrovert and I'm always out when the world isn't like this, but it's affected all right. of us. So I'm in the same boat too, but yeah, absolutely. Well, Dwight, before we continue, if everyone could listen to one more word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA? Or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A new treatment has just been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all of the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this new treatment option a reality. To learn more about this new treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
All right. Well, Dwight, thank you for sharing that. And before we get into, I'll get into treatments and all of that and research in a minute. But before we get into that, you know, you've kind of hit on this already, but what does a typical day look like for you and your family? Like, thinking about, I mean, and I know, you know, right now it's different, but thinking on, like, kind of a normal day of the week, like, with your work schedules and school and all that, what does that look like for your family?
Sure. So my wife is busy providing around-the-clock care to Abby, taking care of her and then homeschooling our boys along with Abby. And then myself, you know, I'm, as I said earlier, you know, I'm teleworking from home part of the day, most days, and then I'm out in the field part of the day. And then, you know, when I come back home, I'm helping her, you know, with housework. And then on the weekends, there's the grocery run, which right now is curbside pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And then just running any errands and catching up on housework. And with whatever time we have remaining, we try to, you know, have some activities as a family. Swim in the pool, go for just a walk around the yard. My wife and I, of course, you know, we can't go far from home, so we take a baby monitor outdoors with us and go for a walk, and that's our time together a lot of times. And so that's pretty much what a typical week would look for us.
Sure. Well, and just shifting gears just a little bit, too. So, as research has evolved in the SMA community, and there are now three different FDA-approved treatments for SMA, when did you begin pursuing treatment for Abby?
Well, as soon as it was available for us. Mm-hmm. The first treatment, of course, was the Spinraza or nusinersen. We started February the 7th of 2017 when it was first available to her. And then with the Risdiplam or the Evrysdi, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, yeah. We were having debates at work on how to pronounce it correctly last week when it got approved. But
So we started that again as soon as it was available to her. In the early access program, which was August the 5th, which was Wednesday before last, I think. And then 2 days later on Friday, I think it was approved by the FDA. So we definitely, and that was the thing, you know, switching from the Spinraza to the Risdiplam, you know, it at that point, you know, it was an experimental drug. So, you know, we had to weigh out, you know, what we thought were the possible risks and rewards of both, especially at this given time. And we went with what we thought would be the best option for her.
Sure, sure. And I know she's just started Evrysdi or Risdiplam, but I guess thinking more about Spinraza, since she was on that for a while, what were some changes or developments you noticed during the, like, while she was on that treatment?
Well, we saw several significant gains, particularly with hand strength. She gained the ability to shake her shoulders, which was adorable to see for the first time. And then her vocalization—that's been a huge thing. She had gotten to where, you know, she was really quiet, and when she did try to make any sounds at all, you know, it was kind of muted. And so she gained the ability to not only produce new sounds, but increase her volume of those sounds as well. And, you know, while she can't say many words, she definitely still is very expressive vocally, and loves to sing along to all of her favorite songs on her cartoon shows and so forth. Prior to starting the Spinraza treatments, my wife, it seemed like on a regular basis, you know, I would talk with her over the phone, or I'd come home from work at the end of the day, and she would be in tears because she had noticed more muscle loss with Abby. Yeah. And so since she started the injections with the Spinraza, I haven't had the first conversation like that with her. So it definitely, not only were there gains, but it stopped the progression of the disease in its tracks. And so it's definitely been effective.
That's awesome. And yeah, and then she's just started Evrysdi. Just curious about how she receives it, because it's an oral treatment. Does she get it through her feeding tube?
She does.
Yeah.
It's once per day. It's once per day through her feeding tube. And again, we haven't, you know, it's only been a week and a half. So as you said, you know, we haven't seen or haven't noticed any gains, but so far it's went great. So we're happy for that. And hopefully it'll continue.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
One point I would like to mention is that with the Spinraza, aside from, you know, the increased risk of the intrathecal injection, the one caveat, I guess, to it was that around where, you know, it's administered once every 4 months, at around month three, we would notice a drop off.
Sure.
That last month, there would be somewhat of a drop off with her strength and vocalization, particularly with strength. And so we're hopeful that the Risdiplam, where, you know, we're administering it every day, that there shouldn't be the drop off that we were seeing with the Spinraza.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, it's definitely something we talk about a lot too in adults as well. Mm-hmm. It's that, yeah, I mean, it's worked great for me, but I think everyone who's on it does notice that. And I mean, that's right. Why it has to be administered every few months.
Right.
But yeah. And before I get to my last couple questions, you know, going back for a minute to physical therapy, So is she still doing any kind of PT right now with the pandemic, like anything at home that you and your wife are doing with her?
Yes, yeah, my wife is definitely continuing the all of the therapies or respiratory treatments and physical therapy, all of those. We just don't have a therapist, you know, coming into the home anymore like we did before.
Sure.
But she was transitioning therapist anyways because the prior therapist that she had had taken, you know, employment elsewhere, and so that individual was in the process of being replaced. So it's just the timing was strange the way it happened, but right now, you know, she doesn't have anyone that visits her in home with therapy.
Sure. Awesome. Well, so Dwight, wrapping up here in our last couple questions. So, you know, we talk a lot about in this community about better understanding people with disabilities, which is vitally important. But as a parent, what's something you wish more people better understood about parents of individuals with disabilities?
Sure. So I'm so happy that you have asked this question because it's something that previously I've given a lot of thought to. There's lots of things that I would like for people to understand about us as parents. The biggest thing is we've changed. You know, since the diagnosis of our child, there's lots of things about us that's changed. Sometimes people offer pity. We definitely do not need the pity. Mm-hmm. What we do need is empathy, acceptance, compassion, and a lot of patience at times. Where most parents experience fatigue from time to time, especially with newborn children, we experience that on an almost daily basis. We worry constantly about our child's health and well-being. We realize that, you know, our constant hygiene and helicoptering is kind of annoying to some people, but that's something that's critical because every action or non-action that we make can have, you know, a significant effect on our child's well-being. We don't do normal. There is no normal anymore. And we probably at this point, you know, my wife and I, we've been doing this now for almost a decade. So it's hard for us to even remember what normal is at times. Social events aren't as easy for us to attend as you know, they once were. But we still, you know, please don't stop, you know, interacting with us. Because we tend to feel, you know, extremely isolated and lonely most of the time. So we still very much have those same social needs, whether we're able to physically, you know, be there or not. You know, just a phone call or a text message or anything goes a long ways.
Absolutely. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, no, and the concept, going on the concept of normalcy, it's something I write about all the time. It's like, whether you're a parent, you're someone with SMA, yeah, that's definitely not in our vocabulary. And I think that, right. And that's what I've come to learn too, is like, you know, even though like we don't live normal lives, that doesn't mean we can't have a great quality of life. And that's, you know, something I try to emphasize too. So that's great. And Dwight, just my final question here, along those lines too, do you have any advice for, I guess, specifically other parents in the SMA community, but really anyone in the community as well?
I would say first and foremost, stay connected to the community. At some point or another, you're going to need other people's knowledge. There's no point of reinventing the wheel. They've learned things. Some of them, you know, have to learn it the hard way. Some of it through their interactions. So, you know, there's a wealth of knowledge there that can take you from believing that there's no hope for your child to 10 years later, they're now on their second treatment, or type of treatment. So that's really important. The social connection in and of itself is really important. Sometimes, you know, you may be having a really tough day and you just need a shoulder to lean on. So that's probably my first and foremost piece of advice that I would give anyone. Secondly, always carefully weigh out the options. that are available to you in regards to your child's care. The third piece of advice I would give, you have to be the voice of advocacy for your child. No one else is going to be. And if something doesn't feel right, regardless of, you know, where that is coming from, whether it's the medical community or anything, if it doesn't feel right, trust your intuition. Intuition is almost never wrong. And lastly, for parents who are new to the community, prepare to adjust your attitude. Allow a period of time for grief of all the losses, because there are going to be losses. And there's a certain level of anticipatory grief that comes along with it. So be prepared for that. Allow yourself to go through those human emotions. And then develop a survival mentality. Just be determined. As the Gwendolyn Strong Foundation's motto is, never give up. Life is going to change a lot. So don't spend time, you know, pining over things that you don't have. Instead, try to focus on the things that you do have. Life may be different, but it's still very good. And as one of the brightest minds of our time, Stephen Hawking famously said, quote, intelligence is the ability to adapt to change, unquote. Mm-hmm. Assuming that premise to be true, you're going to need an abundance of intelligence, because your entire world is about to undergo some very significant changes.
That's great. That's great advice, Dwight. I appreciate you sharing. So awesome.
Sure. You're most welcome.
Awesome. Well, Dwight, thanks again for joining us. This was a great conversation. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we go? I think you nailed it, but
No, that's everything. And thank you so much again for having me on, Kevin. I greatly appreciate it. It was good talking with you.
Absolutely. You as well. And I hope one day when all this is over, we can, you know, see each other again at a conference sometime at an in-person one. It would be great, but awesome.
That would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, for our listeners out there, you can enjoy more stories like this by subscribing to this podcast. We're available on SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also connect with us directly on the SMA News Today forums. And you can follow us daily on our main website at smanewstoday.com for all the latest news and perspectives in the SMA community. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.